Welcome, listeners. We have a very special guest with us today. We have the author of The Soldier's Guide to PTSD, Virginia Cruz, who is also a veteran. I just found out you're a military spouse as well.
Yeah.
And a nationally certified counselor specializing in military issues and combat-related trauma. Virginia, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for what you're doing for the military spouse community. You know, Molly, before you got on, I had a chance to chat with Aaron, and, you know, that our community is really overlooked, and I'm not really sure why, and especially when it comes to mental health issues. I think things can get really hyperbolic and people can think like, oh, that spouse is just being really persistent, you know, in air quotes. And, you know, when it's us at home, we're the ones who are seeing the fallout of PTSD, of moral injury. It's affecting our families, our communities. And so thank you for having me on to talk about this. I really value your time.
Thank you. And I just want to say I loved every part of your book, the honesty that came with it, the vulnerability that you had. And it was just such an easy listen. I'm an audiobook person personally. So I loved listening to it. Whoever you had reading it was really enjoyable to listen to as well.
Kelly Tager. Mm-hmm. She is an award-winning voice artist, and she's just amazing. And I'm just so thankful to have her on that project. Yes, ma'am.
You can have a great book, but if you have a good voice artist doing it as well, it's even better.
Absolutely. Yes, I'm an audiobook person too, and I agree. It was very nice to listen to.
I will pass that along. She will love hearing that. I know it was a really, yes. It was an enjoyable project. And I think I came into it with this fantasy that, oh, well, I'll do the reading because, you know, I'm so important. And which was just ridiculous. And then my colleague and partner in this venture, Katie Salidis. Oh, she's a brilliant fiction writer. So talented. Said, you know, and she said it so gently, you know, you might could think about listening. In fact, I asked Kelly to go ahead and just record a clip, just the intro. And I was like, oh, that's just so, and it was brilliant. And I said, gosh, I want to sound like her. And so, yeah, she's it.
What a gentle and sweet way to go about doing that.
Yes. So for the listeners that, you know, have no idea what we're talking about and would want to read your book, what is the kind of the cliff notes or the elevator pitch? You're in the elevator and you have someone that you're like, oh, I'm an author. Oh, what do you, you know, what's your elevator pitch to kind of grab readers and say that this book is for you?
Oh, thank you. So this is a soldier to soldier guide to PTSD. So when I was getting started, I had really bad combat related PTSD myself. And my origin story is definitely not cool because nobody ever grows up and hopefully nobody says, you know, I want to be a trauma specialist when I grow up, hopefully. So back in 2008, after my third trip to Iraq, I was in Germany where I was stationed at the time and gotten to a little bit of a verbal altercation at my workplace. I mean, I was voluntold to go to mental health. So I went to a military treatment facility there on base and I talked to a full bird colonel active duty psychiatrist. And I was so thankful because I was not doing well. I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I was drinking every day and a lot, even by German standards. I was blowing up my marriage. I was blowing up my perfectly good relationships. I was putting my job in jeopardy. And I knew that I wasn't okay. I was feeling suicidal every single day. And there was a big part of me that just thought I was unraveling and going crazy. So I poured my heart out to the psychiatrist for the better part of 60 minutes. And at the end of that time, he said to me, wow, Virginia, I can tell that you are really struggling, but I can't help you if you won't be honest with me. I'm super confused by that. And he said, you know, we all know that women don't serve in combat. And if you choose not to be honest with me, there's nothing I can do to help you. And so let's just say that didn't end well. But it really was, it kicked me while I was down. It was the kick in the teeth from another military member while I was already suicidal. It made a bad situation that much worse. And it was at that moment that I realized, oh shit, if I don't figure this out, like immediately, yeah. I'm going to die. I am going to no shit die. I need to figure this out. And that was, you know, and 14 years later, here I am talking to you. I went to school, went to grad school, became a master's level counselor. And I started working in an inpatient psychiatric unit for active duty military folks of all branches. And my job was to teach PTSD, you know, just kind of a teaching gig. And they gave me this really wonderful, you know, this really astute, really well-researched curriculum. You know, we talked about the frontal lobes and the activation of the amygdala and the autonomic nervous system. And all of my clients, all my students, just, I could see them falling asleep. And I get it. And, you know, when I was on active duty, I had an NCO who used to always say, you know, hey, are you picking up what I'm putting down? And that's when I realized I need to revamp this. And so I created my own curriculum. Because if there's one thing about PTSD research and even therapy and resources is that, unfortunately, they're not user-friendly. They're not user-friendly to the veteran, definitely not to us as families. There are very few resources that are bilingual, and that is not okay. Especially, you know, Erin, you're in Korea. I live on the Mexican border, and not having bilingual resources is just an abject failure because families, you know, and spouses are the ones who are recognizing this first. And so we've had 22 suicides, you know, we say 22 a day, and everyone in our community knows what that means. And that's not okay. So what that tells me is that, and this number has been stagnant for over a decade, meaning that what we're doing isn't working. Right. And why is that? You know, if we can train an 18-year-old soldier how to fix a fighter jet, a multi-billion dollar fighter jet or million dollar fighter jet. If, you know, 19-year-old military spouses putting through visa applications and getting their household goods together by themselves with two kids on their hips. You know what? If they can do that, we can certainly teach about post-traumatic stress disorder, about moral injury, about how to get better. This isn't rocket surgery. This is not high math. You know, PTSD, mental health, we can teach this. So you can pick up what I'm putting down. And so there are a lot of books out there that are for clinicians. You know, there are really great research articles and there are entire APA journals devoted to the study of trauma. And this isn't that. This is from one soldier to another. This is from me to you. This is from my family to your family. Because if somebody had given me this guide that I wrote after I left the hospital, we went ahead and my students just hounded me until I put it in a book. If I had had this guide 20 years ago, it would have saved me over a decade worth of bullshit.
Yeah. That reminds me of in your book, you talk about the hole, the soldier being in the hole and everyone coming by and offering their 2 cents of help that wasn't worth much. And then you get the soldier who's been in that hole coming down in that hole to help the other soldier out. And that's really what you're doing here. And it's incredible.
Oh, thank you. You know, we have to support each other. Mm. If we're not looking out for each other, what the fuck are we doing? I mean, seriously. You know, the MilSpouse community can be unnecessarily competitive and catty, and we've gotten a crappy reputation for that. Ladies, you know it.
I do, yeah.
You know, I'm a therapist, so I do not believe in shame, and I don't believe in lies. So, you know, we have a really bad reputation, and it's not fair. Because if you want to find out what's going on, you ask a military spouse. If you need to get something done, you ask a military spouse. Military spouses knowing about PTSD, this is that on the ground help that, you know, and we can make this available. And so, you know, I'm really passionate about talking with military spouses and military families about PTSD, about moral injury, and about all the things that, frankly, are really uncomfortable to talk about. You know, we talk about suicide. We're talking about erectile dysfunction. We're talking about our sex lives. We're talking about our family lives. And these are, you know, these are really uncomfortable topics. And the thing I love most about the MILF spouse community is there's just no such thing as shame here for the most part. We can talk and have some real talk. And so that's why I really wanted to come and visit with you guys.
I totally agree with everything that you're saying. You know, if you're listening right now and you're a military spouse, and especially if you're a woman, you understand what Virginia is talking about here. And you also mentioned, you know, we're talking about 19-year-olds sometimes, 18-year-olds who've gotten married and have had to grow up so fast. And there's such a underlying weight on the shoulders of a young military family who's especially just starting out and may not know exactly what they're getting into. And we talk about this all the time that, oh, well, you knew when you went in, you knew when you got married. And that's absolutely not true. We don't know. We can imagine. But until it happens to you, until your soldier comes home and you realize it's a different person that has walked through the door, you really have no idea how to handle it.
Yeah. And comments like that are so unbelievably unhelpful. Mm-hmm. And they're really shaming. Mm-hmm. Can we just be honest about that? You know, I think sometimes, you know, and I'm not saying anybody's going out of their way to be mean. I don't think that's anyone's intent. Right. But when we make comments like that, when someone makes a comment like, oh, well, you know, blah, 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 you know, well, you should have known when you joined the military. It's like, it just, there are unintended secondary and third order effects in addition to making that person feel small. So that you could feel big, it keeps them from getting the help that they deserve to get themselves and their families back on track. And that is not fair. And the same goes for trauma comparison. You know, I hear this a lot in the MILF spouse community. And I would encourage any of your listeners who are interested to go to thesoldiersguide.com. And you can download a free preview copy of the book. You can get the first few chapters for free. We want everyone to have that. So download it, give it to anyone you want. Because we go over kind of facts and rumors about PTSD. And then we also go over the no kidding symptoms line by line to help you figure out what it is. But back to trauma comparison, you know, one of the rumors that we cover in right off the bat in the book is this idea that trauma is somehow, you know, reserved for those who quote unquote deserve it. And that it's really only for combat veterans and definitely not for spouses. And definitely not, you know, and so, you know, even within the military community, you know, we can get really myopic and say, well, you know, you may have been in combat, but you know, you only got blown up once. I got blown up twice. And you went to Iraq. Well, I went to Iraq and Afghanistan. And that is really shitty. And to your listeners, I say this with love. If you're doing that, stop it. Because that's shitty. And it makes people feel shitty. And it is keeping us from getting the help that we deserve to live free lives. And that trauma comparison is so tough. You know, when we're leaving, you know, when we're getting married at 18, 19 and leaving and going to the world, you know, we're kids ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're being for real and honest, I mean, and I'll just speak for myself. I didn't enlist in the military because I was trying to decide between my gap year in Paris or Bruges.
Right.
When will it be? No, it was, I need to get the fuck out now. How can I do that immediately? Where is my eject button? Because I got nothing going on here. And I, you know, I will just go out on a limb and say that I am the norm and not the exception, because I don't want you guys to get strongly worded emails. Well, you know, I gave a scholarship to Yale to, you know, enlist. And I get it. I get it. But, you know, trauma comparison, it's not fair. And it keeps us from getting the help that we deserve. And, you know, there's a lot of maybe unfair comparison within our community. You know, and, you know, we always joke about how, you know, well, so-and-so wears, you know, their virtual rank, you know, right. They wear their spouse's rank. Like, oh, I mean, I've when I was on active duty and now as a military spouse, you know, I mean, I get these, I mean, girl, you hear it all the time, you know.
Like, I know.
You know it. So-and-so walked into duty and they said, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Like, oh, and that's so cringy.
It is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to the, you know, the trauma comparison and kind of the, and kind of relate it to, you know, the VA. The VA actually recognizes three different types of PTSD. There's combat, there's non-combat, and then there's military sexual trauma. So if the VA recognizes that non-combat PTSD, that should tell you something. That should tell you that even though you weren't in combat, you can still get rated for PTSD through the VA. So that alone should validate that PTSD can come from more than combat.
I'm so glad you said that. And I know that both of you work in the business of helping veterans get their service connection. And I'm so thankful for that. That's something I'm really passionate about also. The DSM, so that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's a big ass purple book. It's about yay thick, and you'll see it on your therapist desk. So right now we're in something called the version 5. So this is really important for veterans to know, and also folks who work with veterans, especially in terms of service connection, because the definition of PTSD changed really significantly from the DSM-4 to the DSM-5. And that change happened in 2013, which was, you know, it feels like it was 10 minutes ago. I mean, it's almost 10 years. So there are a lot of service members, a lot of veterans who may have gone out for their rating before the definition of PTSD changed.
Oh, yeah.
And if that is the case, I really encourage your veterans to talk with a veteran service organization, a service rep. Talk with somebody and learn more. I think the biggest thing that changed, one of the biggest changes that I appreciate in the PTSD is they talk about the definition of trauma. And so you'll hear this talked about as criterion alpha, criterion A. And that is what the big purple book says, this is a trauma. And it's defined as actual or threatened exposure to death, serious injury, or sexual violence. Say again, mm-hmm. Death, serious injury, or sexual violence. And that is a huge umbrella. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. Trauma is ubiquitous. It in North America, it's pretty hard not to come by. And I want to talk about that idea of something being actual or threatened. Because when it comes to trauma comparison, I think the biggest comparing that we do and the biggest voice that we have sometimes is our own. So we will say things like, well, I can't have PTSD because at least I came home in one piece.
Right.
Or at least I still have my legs, or at least my kids still have a mom. So I don't deserve to have PTSD. And deserving to have PTSD. Like, I'm a really nice person. Like, we're all really nice, good-looking women. Right? We're all really intelligent. We can agree that none of us deserve to have the flu or COVID or HIV or schizophrenia, and certainly don't deserve to have PTSD. But guess what? PTSD doesn't give a shit about that. It doesn't really matter what we think or believe we deserve. So PTSD is something that happens to you. It's not something wrong with you. I'm going to say that one more time for the kids in the back. PTSD is something that happens to you. It is not, I say again, not something wrong with you. So when it comes to that threatened exposure, what we have to remember is that the brain is amazing. It's amazing and terrifying. And researchers, we don't even, you know, it's like the depths of the ocean and the depths of our psyche. We just don't, there's so much we don't know out there. And what happens is our brain and our body will have a very normal and natural and expected reaction when it is under threat. So not to go into the neuroscience of it, but that is our autonomic nervous system. That's the part of our brain, miraculous, that makes us able to breathe so that we don't have to think about it, keeps our heart beating, you know, our eyes blink so they don't dry out, and it's automatic. And so when our body and our brain, when our brain feels under threat, it will very automatically, without us choosing it, will go into fight, flight, freeze. And if, like, for example, if you're driving around, as I often do here in South Texas, and, you know, an animal darts out in the road, before you know it, your foot hits the brake, you've held onto the steering wheel, your heart is beating out of your chest, your eyes have dilated, you're shaking, you're sweating, and it all happened in an instant. And that is billions of years of evolution. That is the miracle of our brains. And it will go into fight, flight, freeze. Oh, and by the way, we don't get a choice which one. Mm. We do not get a choice. So a lot of people will, you know, we have this narrative that we're like, well, I don't deserve to have PTSD because I froze. You know, or I don't deserve it because I didn't tell. You know, and I'm thinking about, you know, childhood trauma especially is where I hear this. But we do not get a choice. The brain will make that automatic choice for us. And that is because our brain has two jobs. Number one, to keep us alive. And number two, to make meaning, whether we have all the information or not. But, you know, that's another story for another day. But our brain will very automatically go into fight, flight, freeze. So when we're talking about threat exposure, I think a lot about convoy operations. So, and this is just one example, and there are hundreds, and I'm sure hundreds that you both hear in your work. Every time a soldier leaves the wire, a lot of things start happening very automatically. Our heart starts beating, we start sweating, shaking, our eyes will actually dilate so we can focus in. It's like our frontal lobes almost turn off because we're not in Disney. We don't need to remember this. You know, we're not taking happy snaps. That's why we don't remember a lot of our trauma. It's why there's so much kind of quote unquote memory loss. It's not memory loss. It's your brain protecting you and just trying to keep you alive. But every time we leave the wire, our brain is going to react that way, whether we get shot at or not. Why? Because hopefully we're smart cookies. Hopefully we've listened to our S2 brief. Hopefully we watch the news. Hopefully we know what's going on. And, you know, we know that convoys get shot up. We know that people get blown up. We know that that happens all the time, whether we like it or not. It's really frustrating. And so when we come back from a deployed environment like that, our bodies and our brains are going to react the same way, whether we get shot at or not. So when we talk about that actual or threatened exposure, that's where the trauma from threatened exposure comes from, if that makes sense. So it's like being bullied. You know, your body and your brain is going to react. If you're a little kid and you're getting beat up for your lunch money every day, your body and your brain is going to react whether you get beat up or whether you are just scared half to death.
Yeah. Yeah. All. Wow. How beautifully put, all of that.
Absolutely.
And that's, yeah, I love that. That's, you know, we're talking a lot about from the veterans' perspective here, or the active duty spouses' perspective here. What does that look like, and how does that manifest on the outside? How, as spouses, can we start to recognize that that might be happening to our spouse, even if they aren't realizing it themselves?
You know, I love that question because you know, military spouses are really intelligent, and kids, maybe you guys lucked out and had dumb kids, but kids are smart and they're incredibly observant. And, you know, when it comes to trauma, you know, and I'll speak as the person who experienced PTSD, I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what was wrong. I just knew something was wrong. And guess what? My spouse knew too. And I knew that he knew something was wrong, and he knew I knew he knew something was wrong. And it mm-hmm. became this big elephant in the room that we just couldn't talk about. And so what I did is I started avoiding my spouse because, and I told myself that it was because I don't want to worry him. I don't want to worry my spouse. I don't want to worry my community, my family, my church. I'm just going to push everyone away and isolate because that is what is best for them. And, you know, here in my own, you know, maybe I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just going to, you know, do some housework today, or I'm just going to go to the garage all day. And, or I'm, you know, I'm going to work under the car, or, you know, I'm going to start day drinking at 9 a.m. You know, do whatever it takes to push away. And so the first thing I would want my male spouse fam to know is that it's very unlikely that we don't know what's going on, but it is very likely that we're not talking about it in an honest and authentic way. And that's a tough conversation. And here's another one, you know, because I'm a therapist, so I'm in the bad news delivery business a lot of the time. So I'm just gonna lay it out, ladies.
Go ahead.
And this hurts my heart. But if I am not telling you the truth, then I'm bullshitting you, and I'm not in the bullshit business. People get help for trauma when they're ready and not when we're ready. Okay. And that's really frustrating. That is really frustrating because we see our spouses suffering. We see their drinking. We see their depression. We see the anger outbursts. We see the fist fights in the parking lot. We're seeing them push away our kids. We're seeing them not go to the baseball game because they can't do crowds anymore. And we see them hurting, and it hurts us. And we can get so angry and so frustrated, and it is hard. And what I need to tell you, ladies, with love, because this is with a heavy heart, is that there's nothing we can do to make somebody else get the help that they need. And that sucks.
Yeah, that's hard.
It's so hard.
And, and it's not fair, and it's not okay, and it sucks. It absolutely sucks. And we have all seen really amazing families get torn apart. And it's not fair, and it's not okay. And it's not okay for our kids. But it is what it is. And we need to get the help that we need. We need that support. It is so important.
Yeah. Oftentimes I feel like the family and the spouses often see the symptoms of the actual condition, being PTSD, being anxiety, being depression. They see the symptoms, they see the coping mechanisms that the soldier is having, but yeah, oftentimes it never gets diagnosed, or it never gets that label because the soldier isn't ready. A lot of the veterans that I talk to on the phone, they have a light bulb moment when they're talking to me, you know, and when I bring up mental health, I'm very open and honest with my veterans on the phone about mental health. I have a social work background, so it comes very easy. You know, it's not like I don't tiptoe around it. Some of them aren't used to that, you know, and they weren't expecting that from a veteran coach. But I like to be very open and honest and ask the hard questions. And I always say that you don't have to answer my questions, but I'm going to ask them anyway. And I find that a lot of them, they're like, oh, when you put it that way, or, oh, when you ask me that way, I guess I do struggle with that. Or I give them like an example. Well, when you go to the restaurant and the host wants to sit you in the middle of the restaurant, what happens? And they often say, oh, that booth over there by the exit or in the corner, you know, those booths that are up against the wall, I'll ask for that booth if it's open. So why do you think you do that? So it's kind of like, they just don't think about it. That's their coping mechanism. They don't think about why they do what they do, and they don't even realize that they do it. But I guarantee that spouse does, or those children, or daddy doesn't like to be in crowds, so let's go this way instead. Or the wife knows, ask for that booth prior to them even walking into the restaurant. You know, so we kind of always have that perspective that sometimes the soldier doesn't have, whether we bring it up or not.
Oh, I love that. You know, in the book, I talk a lot about the big two. And those are the big two questions that we individually have to ask and answer to know if change is possible. So, you know, a lot of us want to change. You know, we want to change the way we look. We want to change our eating habits. We want to exercise every day. You know, we want to practice penmanship, whatever. But when it comes down to how does change happen, we have to be able to ask and very honestly answer the big two questions. And those questions are, do I believe change is possible? And do I want to change? And those sound very deceptively easy if we're being for real and honest. And Molly, with a social work background, you are in the change-making business. And when you're asking those questions, you're asking a very sly version of the big two. So bravo, girl. But, you know, we're asking, you know, do you think change is possible? Do you believe it's possible? Do you believe it's possible that you could sleep through the night and not have a nightmare? Do you believe it's possible that you could work through your trauma and get to the point where you can hold your child again? Do you believe it's possible that you could work on your symptoms and get back to a point where you can function? And a lot of times veterans will say to me, well, that's what I want. And I said, you know, I get that. That's what we all want. But I need to know, do you believe that that's possible for you? Not the where's, not the how's, not the how will I do this. Do you believe it's possible? And a lot of folks will say, oh, yeah, anything's possible, Virginia. I could wake up tomorrow. The grass could be blue and the sky could be green. Anything could be possible. And then we get to the nitty gritty. How bad do you want this shit? Because trauma therapy, it's not easy, but it is not forever. It's not forever. So what we know is that evidence-based treatments, what they call EBTs, because if it's not an acronym in the military, it's not real. Those evidence-based treatments take between 10 and 15 sessions, and they have, you know, they work for most people most of the time. So if we just apply, say, the Pareto rule, just 80-20, and in the VA itself, and Molly, you were talking about, you know, the VA, if the VA recognizes it and it's huge ass bureaucracy, then that's saying something. And the VA recognizes three evidence-based treatments for PTSD. So they talk about prolonged exposure therapy, cognitive processing therapy, and EMDR. So that's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. And those are offered at most VAs. They work for most people most of the time. So just using the 80-20 rule, if we go through course of action A, you know, say we do cognitive processing therapy, oh, I'm an outlier. Then we'll go to prolonged exposure. Oh, I'm an outlier there. Well, okay, I'll try EMDR. Now, if we are an outlier with all three, and let's talk about evidence-based treatments. Those are tested in the same way that medicines are. Like, you know, heart treatments are, you know, so this is done what we call a longitudinal study. So this in many cases has been done over decades with literally thousands of service members. And so we know that these treatments work for most people most of the time. And if someone is an outlier in all three of those evidence-based treatments that the VA approves, thankfully, we have so many more treatments. They're not VA approved, but they work. And then we have a treatment for what we call treatment-resistant PTSD. And every day, the researchers who work on PTSD, I mean, these are some incredible women, I got to tell you. They're up at UT Health Science Center, a Strong Star program. And these are just incredible women changing the world like you two. And, you know, they're using things like the God Shot, the stellate ganglion block. They're using MDMA-assisted therapy. They're doing couples-focused co-joint therapy for PTSD. There are all of these treatments that will work. So the idea that you are outside of the treatment realm is pretty, it's statistically just not a thing. I won't say it's a statistic impossibility, but it's pretty small. But it comes right down to that big two. Do I want to change? Am I willing to go and talk, eyeball somebody who I don't know, who may or may not even be a veteran, and share my experience with them? Am I willing to be radically honest and authentic, even though I know it's going to be terrifying and it's going to hurt? Am I willing to do that? Am I willing to do whatever it takes to get myself back together because my family needs me? Am I willing to talk with someone about feeling suicidal every single fucking day because that is how I feel? Am I willing to go through the detox process and get off alcohol? Oh, and that shit hurts.
Yeah.
That shit hurts. As someone in sobriety, oh, man alive. And, you know, am I willing to do the work? And that's a really hard question. And so that's why, you know, I say with so much love to our Mill Spouse fam, you know, that's a big, big question. Whereas that's a big ask. It's not, and I think sometimes, and it's well-meaning. I don't mean to be shitty. You know, it's well-meaning. Well, they just don't want to get the help. It's like, calm down. It is not like that.
Yeah.
You know, if we have not talked, you know, after the Afghanistan withdrawal in August, I had a lot of Vietnam era veterans come into therapy for the first time in their lives because they were very triggered by what they saw.
Yeah.
And a lot of soldiers were.
Whew. We saw it in Lux too.
Yeah, and family members. And this is for real. And, you know, so those big two questions, they are hard. They are hard. And so I don't want us to get trapped in this dichotomous thinking that it's either I'm all in or I'm not. You know, there are a lot of us who are listening to this podcast. Maybe we've had childhood trauma. Maybe we know that our spouses experience combat trauma. Maybe, yeah, an MST. That is a betrayal on a whole different level. And in the Soldier's Guide to PTSD, we have a whole chapter devoted to moral injury. You know, there are a lot of us who are listening to your podcast right now who are on the fence about the big two questions, and that's okay. I need you to know that that's okay. It's okay to be on the fence about that. And what I would encourage you to think about, is it possible that you're a lot stronger than you think you are? And I ask you that for this reason, because we know from the science and the research that trauma warps our fundamental belief systems. It is a total mind fuck. It will warp our beliefs about ourselves, about other people, about the world. And it's possible, you know, I just want you to ask yourself, is it possible that our self-doubt is actually part of our PTSD? But is it possible that we're stronger than we think we are? You know, have we ever done something before? And I think about that 19-year-old, you know, doing their first PCS move, or, you know, doing an overseas move, Aaron, girl, yeah. Oh my heart. Oh, that's awful. Mm-hmm. You know, making sure all the paperwork is dress right dress. You know, have you ever done something before that you thought was impossible at the time? Is it possible that it is your belief system that is undermining your attempt to make change? And would you be willing to try? Just try and see if you're stronger than you think you are.
I talked kind of about the veterans that come and they don't realize that they have PTSD or might have PTSD. But a lot of veterans come and they talk to me and they say, you know, I have PTSD and I'm ready to like file a claim for PTSD and get the rating that I deserve. And that's very few and far between, at least in my experience, but some do. And that's their first step. Oftentimes that is their first step. They say, I don't have a diagnosis for PTSD, but I know what happened. And we have ways of helping them get a diagnosis, get all the evidence that they need to back that claim through VA Claims Insider. And that is oftentimes that first step. And usually it's not straight out of the military. Usually it's, I even have Vietnam vets still coming and getting PTSD claims pushed through. There's no time limit to PTSD. It's just when the service member is ready. But yeah, oftentimes the VA claims process and talking to someone, that's the first step, is to get that started.
Because the claims process can also be so daunting to,
so
to
daunting.
Someone who really needs it and really wants it. And that's something we see a lot, is it's not an easy process, and it can take some time. And so as the spouse, do we approach, do we acknowledge something verbally with our spouse? Do we wait for them to come to us?
That is a great question. I'm a therapist, so I run on a very simple premise when it comes to my life, my family, my practice. Whenever there's an elephant in the room, it's always good to name it. If there's a feeling in the room, giving that voice takes away the power of whatever is happening. What is unsaid can bring us shame. It can bring us fear. And by naming the elephant in the room, it reclaims the power of that. You know, when we have the courage to say, you know what, I know I have PTSD, but I don't feel like I deserve to get better. I am really frightened that if I start crying, I might never stop. I am really afraid that if I go to my kid's soccer game, that I'm going to have a panic attack and be brought out in the ambulance in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. And we all know this happens, and we know it's real. Mm-hmm. You know, let's think about things that affect us as military spouses. The elephant in the room. So let's talk about sex, ladies, and let's talk about orgasms. Okay. So erectile dysfunction and female arousal disorder, they are the, you know, they're peas and carrots with PTSD. And that is really not fair. That's really fucked up. And a lot of times, and it makes sense from a biological perspective, because if all of our bandwidth is going into keeping us alive, which is our brain's job, our brain needs to keep us alive. Our brain is like procreation. You lost your mind, girl. Like, absolutely not. No orgasm for you.
Yeah.
And that's how that goes. And a lot of the times, and, you know, in talking with couples, especially military couples, we, you know, there's an expectation that when our husbands come back home from deployment, and I'm just speaking about husbands, not that wives don't deploy, but just to speak to my own experience and the experience of the real people that I talk to. So it's not meant to not include folks. You know, it's like, oh, well, the minute he comes home, there's going to be a big old sex fest, you know, and there's this very unrealistic expectation about physical intimacy a lot of the time, not all of the time, but a lot of the time after a deployment. And so, but it's not talked about. And there's a lot of pressure, like, oh, shit, as soon as my husband comes home, I better take off this 10 pandemic pounds. I better lose the COVID-19 pounds that I just put on. Because, you know, I am not looking good in a thong these days. You know, we put this pressure on ourselves. We put this pressure on, and we talk about it as male spouses. We talk about it to each other. We laugh, but that's a real pressure. And what if our spouse comes home and all of a sudden is not able to achieve an erection? Holy elephant in the room. We, you know, we have built this up, and we are mind fucked too. I mean, let's just, you know, and there's no way, you know, the wife is having an orgasm either. It's just, we can fake it a little better. It's biopsychosocial. It is so much in our head. And then it will become this elephant in the room. And then we start thinking to ourselves like, oh my God, my husband can't get an erection because of the weight that I put on while he was on deployment. Oh,
yeah.
You know, and I wish that folks listening to this podcast could see the big head nods going on. And I know they're happening at home right now too. And in the car, you're listening to this, you're like, oh shit, girl's telling the truth. Yes, I am. Yes, I am telling the truth, because we don't talk about it. And then we just start avoiding it. Then we're like, well, maybe if I have something a little, you know, what if I do it this way? What if I do it that way? And it's like, whoa. And all of a sudden, this unsaid thing, Erin, to get back to your question, has taken, it is in the bedroom with y'all. It is now in the bedroom. And it is your third partner because it is unsaid and it has so much power.
It's this monster that is always in the house and it follows you around and it's standing in between you two. And then the wife feels like, oh, it's me. And then the husband probably feels like, well, I can't be enough or I'm not able to. And then they start avoiding the spouse. And that's where we hear all of these divorce statistics for military spouses. And that hearing coming into the military family dynamic and hearing those statistics has one, always terrified me. And two, just made me realize just like how serious everything becomes for a military family. Mm-hmm. And these big, big issues that not a lot of civilian families have to deal with come into play, and we're not equipped to handle it. There's no class on it.
There's not. And we have each other. And I think, while the book is The Soldier's Guide to PTSD, as a military wife over 20 years now, although it only looks 10, ladies. this is for all of us. This is for military families too. I think giving voice to it takes away its power. If we say something like, you know what? I'm feeling so much anxiety because I'm worried how you feel about my weight gain and that you might not be sexually attracted to me anymore. You just named a really big elephant. All of a sudden that elephant became really small. So I'm going to tell you, 99 times out of 100, your husband's going to be like, girl, I don't care what you're wearing. Give me them boobies, right? And almost every single time. But by speaking the truth, by naming the elephant in the room, you take away its power. And so when it comes to PTSD, we have a chapter in the book about talking to family members about PTSD, getting help and having those scripts. Because if you're not cheating, you're not trying. You know, we've got all of this wonderful research and, you know, 100 years of psychology. Let's go ahead and use it. You know, we can use some of those scripts to talk to our family members. Some of the things that we do in the book is, you know, and it's that elevator speech, just like Molly was talking about. If it's taking more than 60 seconds, you're probably doing it wrong. So the idea of having a private place to talk and asking for permission to speak, you know, we're just saying, you know, Aaron, since you've been home from deployment, I have really been feeling a lot of things. And I'm wondering if it's okay with you if I could just take 30 seconds to speak uninterrupted, just to get it all out before I lose my nerve. Would that be okay with you? And then waiting for that verbal answer. And then, you know, in the book, we talk about this idea of, you know, a before, a middle, and an after. You know, before, you know, you went on deployment, I saw a lot of joy in your eyes. And when you were gone, I was worried a lot about you. And I was really concerned. You know, I stress ate and I was worried and I thought about you all the time. And, you know, and I heard about other people getting that knock on the door in the big blue van, and it was really frightening. And when you came home, I was so relieved, but a big part of me was really frightened also because I wasn't sure what to expect. Mm. And now that you are back, I feel worried because I don't see that light in your eyes anymore. And a big part of me is frightened that it might be my fault. And I don't know what the answer is here, but I want to start a conversation because I love you and I love us and I love this family. And I'm going to do whatever the fuck it takes to make this work.
Wow.
And the biggest part of the elevator speech that we talk about in the book is step 6. And that is shut the fuck up, be quiet and allow your spouse to say the next thing.
Which is hard.
Oh, girl. It is so hard. Every part of you is going to want to jump in. and say, well, what do you think? What do you think? And it's like, no, you just need to be quiet and you need to allow your spouse that time to metabolize that. And it's not easy. And you know what? The answer might be, I'm not ready to talk about this right now. Mm-hmm. Or the answer might be, I need to take a walk. Or the answer might be, girl, I need a drink. And you know what? But you've opened the door. You've made the conversation. And, you know, just by being open and honest and authentic, I don't think you can lose there. And I'm going to encourage you before, you know, in the book, we talk about writing down your elevator speech and practicing it with a mentor, with a friend, with a therapist. And having that social support that is so important for military spouses, not just your mil spouse fam, but also, do you have a therapist? Do you have someone who can listen to you and give you an objective third person perspective, whether you like it or not? You know, do you have, you know, a lot of us don't have family members, or we live on the other side of the planet, and that is just not a thing. You know, so it's so important, though, to practice this elevator speech out loud, because you are going to be nervous. You're going to cry. Oh, there's going to be big snot, big tears. Have tissue on hand, because you are talking about the thing that is most important to you, and that is your life together. And so, yeah, I would say for us as mil spouses, whenever there's an elephant in the room, it is so easy to go along to get along and be like, okay, yeah, you go ahead and just fix the car up. And then we can't understand why 20 years later, or at nine years, 6 months, we get the papers. Was it really a surprise? And I'm not saying it's on us. I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. It takes a lot of courage to speak the truth in love. It takes a lot of courage. And if you're looking for a pep talk, and I'll defer to Molly as the social worker. There is, my favorite social worker besides Molly Cruzen is Brené Brown. And she has these wonderful TED Talks about vulnerability. They're like 15 minutes long, and they are totally worth your time. Brené with a B as in Bravo, Brené Brown. And she is a vulnerability researcher, and she speaks to this so much better than I ever could. And I'm going to encourage you to go ahead and watch those, because it's too easy. And to do the thing, to have the courage to, when there's an elephant in the room, introduce it. It's not easy. It's not enjoyable. But that's where growth happens. And we deserve that. We deserve that.
Yeah. And I like at the end of maybe that, you know, if it isn't time, or if they don't want it, they don't feel comfortable talking to you, giving that soldier the option, like, look, if you're not ready to talk to me, like, let's work on someone that you are comfortable talking to, and kind of giving them that option, I feel like might be kind of an in-between. Like, okay, you're not ready to, you know, name the elephant or talk to me about it because I'm too in it with you. Mm-hmm. But kind of giving them that option to, hey, you don't have to talk to me. I'm just opening the door and telling you it's okay to talk to me. But you know, I can help you find the help. I can help you find someone that you're comfortable talking to. And it kind of names that elephant, but it's a way around it. It's like that elephant is blocking the door being help. And you're kind of just like shifting that elephant over a little bit to show them that door to help and that it's open.
I love that, Molly. By naming the elephant in the room, you take away its power. You have shrunk it. You have shrunk it. I think it's so important for us as military spouses, and especially if our loved one is dealing with what we think might be PTSD. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy to figure out, you know, definitely, you know, I would encourage all your listeners to go to thesoldiersguide.com and just download the preview copy. you know, so they can go ahead and get those resources and figure out what, like, no joke, you know, what are the symptoms? What is this? What isn't it? And what can I do about it?
Wow. I just want to say thank you so much, Virginia, for coming in today. Please, listeners, please check out The Soldier's Guide to PTSD. Everything that you've talked about today has opened my eyes to so many things, that it's possible to get help. There is hope, and it doesn't have to stop here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, there is a lot of hope, but it's hard to see that when we're sick.
Yeah.
Or when we're really entrenched, you know, when we're in it, like what you said, when we're in it, I mean, gosh, you can even be a social worker and it is hard to see the light. And just so important. And I want to encourage your listeners to join our community. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on the TikTok, which is so fun. Yay.
We love TikTok.
Oh my God. It is my favorite. Yes. And we have we release something called a mental health minute every Monday. Oh. So we have videos. And the Soldier's Guide to PTSD, we have it available. It's in paperback, audiobook, and I promise it's not me reading, and a Kindle e-copy. And also just today, we released our new workbook.
Oh, wow.
So, now that is only in paper copy, because it's to help people go through the reading and then also journal about it, to write down their elevator speech, you know, with everything right there, to go line by line through the symptomology. So that workbook is available in paperback only. And we've got, you know, wherever fine books are sold, from Barnes and Noble, the Amazon, because everything's on the Amazon. And
everything.
I would encourage you to check us out. Join our community. I really admire all the folks, and especially all the awesome mill spouses that we have interacting on our pages, because, you know, we're forgotten. And that's not okay. And there is, before I forget, you know, there is secondary PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be a DSM diagnosis at this point, but, you know, I think we'd be crazy not to think that the person we love the most on this planet, being mentally ill, is not going to affect us. That's crap. Mm. And so I just want to encourage our mill spouse fam to get help. The only good thing about pandemic is everything's online now. Everything's online. If you want to go to AA, you want to go to NA, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, it's all online. You don't have to go to the basement of the chapel. You know, you can go online, people, and you're not going to see your chain of command there. So calm down. You know, but counseling is available online, which really opens up the aperture. So if you are not keen on, you know, going to base mental health, going up to the fourth floor, I got you. You don't have to. You don't have to anymore. You can do this online. But please, please get support, because you deserve this. We all deserve to reclaim our lives from PTSD and moral injury. We absolutely can do this, but not alone. I mean, you wouldn't go out on a convoy by yourself. You need to get your fire team around you.
Get your battle buddies.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And listeners, if you're new here, I do put all these links that she's talking about in our description. So please check them out. It'll be easy access for you that way. And we'll put everything that she has mentioned below, where to get the book, the workbook, where to join the communities, and join her TikTok, which I'm going to do right as we get off of this.
Same.
But thank you. Thank you so much again for coming on and helping military families across the globe. We have listeners from all over the world. I just checked yesterday and it's so exciting. We're a growing community. We're small but mighty. And thank you for taking the time to talk to our military spouses. Really appreciate it.
Where are the backbone?
And provide a really great resource too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. Thanks for writing that great book. Yeah. All the things that you're doing, you're really making a difference in our community.
Oh, thank you. I would love to come back on anytime. If you're
you are always welcome.
If your listeners have questions, I would love, I listened to your listener question podcast and I was like, oh my God, this is so fun. So if you guys have any questions, please don't assume I have a life, because I totally don't. It would be a joy to connect with any of your listeners and with you guys always. It is an absolute privilege to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
VA Claims Insider is an education-based coaching consulting company for disabled veterans who are exploring eligibility for increased VA disability benefits. VACI was founded in 2016 by Brian Reese, Air Force Service disabled veteran and former U.S. Air Force captain.
VA Claims Insider currently serves more than 300,000 unique veterans per month across its websites and membership programs. VACI's mission is veterans helping veterans access education-based resources to get the VA disability rating and compensation they deserve.